This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The Detroit Free Press sent out a squad of reporters who spent the weekend driving all over the state to learn more about the 13 men who authorities say were part of the elaborate kidnapping plot against Governor Whitmer, and who also planned to storm and take hostages at the state's capital. M.L. Elric is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist with the Detroit Free Press who was part of the team investigating over the weekend, and he joins us now. M.L. Elric, welcome to Stateside.
It's great to be with you.
So who were the guys that you were assigned to investigate?
I was asked to look into Adam Fox, who is the alleged ringleader of the plot to kidnap, possibly execute Governor Whitmer, blow up, possibly kill police officers, storm the state capitol, hold some sort of tribunal, and I guess in general, overthrow the tyrants who have asked us to do unreasonable things such as keep our masks on and not cough in each other's face. So Mr. Fox was my assignment. And I wouldn't presume to know everything about him, but after 17 hours and 500 miles, I know a lot more about him than just about anybody else, I'd say.
Can you share a little bit of what you learned?
Sure. And if you want to read our story, you can go to freep.com. We appreciate if people subscribe, because I'll tell you, the overtime bill I'm putting in is not going to be small. But what we found out is that sometime around 2014, Mr. Fox went through a couple things where, in fact, he became Mr. Fox. His birth name was Adam Wagoner. In 2014, he petitioned a court to change his name to his mother's maiden name, which is perhaps apropos of nothing, but certainly not a very common thing. Not too long after that, he got married, which should be a joyful occasion, but the marriage began to fall apart in less than a year. And the court records that I reviewed showed that he was accused of being drunken, of driving drunk, of smashing property to try and get to his wife to potentially harm her, that he made violent threats, that he likes guns. Nothing wrong with that. But when you're drinking and you're threatening somebody, that can be a concern. Mm-hmm. And in general, that he was someone who may have had some pretty serious anger management issues. And we talk about that and share some of those text messages in my exclusive report for the Free Press.
Yeah. Did you notice any common bonds between the men who were indicted? Anything about their upbringings or their life circumstances?
Some pretty sweet beards was the first thing that jumped out at me.
I thought
this may have been a reboot of Duck Dynasty, but not quite as quaint as those fellers. But I must say I was really focused on Mr. Fox and wasn't able to glean much more about the other people than I read in our big story in Sunday's Free Press. But it does seem that the common denomination is that these are people who are in outstate Michigan, that they tend to live in rural areas, and that there's some, if we're to believe what neighbors told us and what we found in public records, that there's some disaffection with government, that they feel like many people who we're hearing from now, that government has overreached and that it's time for the people to rise up and do something about it. If the FBI is right, what they want to do is rise up in a very violent way and perhaps foment a revolution. But I would suggest that if you're not happy with government, there's probably more productive ways to bring about change.
ML, you mentioned that there were definitely some anger management issues and a bunch of evidence around how Adam Fox handled the breakup with his now ex-wife. Can you give us a sense of whether we're talking about an incident or a pattern of behavior?
Sure. And I should make it clear that these are just allegations, because he didn't respond to the PPO request, the personal protection order request that his wife sought. And he also didn't respond to the divorce filing. So anything that's in that file is unremarked upon by the defendant, Mr. Fox. But the court, when that happens, basically says, if you don't say it's not true, we're going to assume it's true. And that's the way it goes. But it does seem that for most of their relationship, according to his ex-wife, there was violence, that he was not a pleasant person, that he drank a lot, and that he had some, if not outright violent tendencies, some very unpleasant character traits, and that basically she says the marriage ended because of him.
Did you get much of a sense that Adam Fox was part of a more pervasive culture or community, or is from the folks that you talked to, did you get a sense that he was more of an outlier?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question. I guess the answer is I don't have that sense, but I couldn't say either way, because the records that I was able to obtain really spoke mainly to his relationship with his loved ones, as opposed to, you know, what he did with the rest of his time. We did speak to the owner of a vacuum cleaner shop in Grand Rapids, where he was living in a basement. It sounds like mainly due to the generosity of the vacuum shop owner, who seemed to have known him for a long time. But other than being someone who didn't seem to have succeeded very well in life, I'm not sure who else he associated with. Our reporting and what the feds have alleged indicate that a lot of the other people he connected with met online, where many people do come together with like minds. But, you know, in terms of if he was a known militia leader, or if he left some sort of screeds for us to read and say, oh yeah, well, this is the point where he thinks he's Guy Fawkes. I didn't run across anything like that, but we covered a lot of ground in a little bit of time, and we're still trying to find out if things like that exist.
The business owner that you referred to is a guy named Bryant Titus, and it sounds like he is someone who had conversations and had a relationship with Adam Fox for many, many years, going back to when Fox was just a kid. And this is somebody who had done military service himself. Was there much of a sense of from Bryant Titus about how Adam Fox's life went off the rails?
We didn't get to speak to Mr. Titus in that kind of detail. And in fact, the interview there was done by my colleague, Eric Seals, who's an outstanding photographer and a terrific journalist. And they mainly talked about his thoughts on what the allegations against Mr. Fox are. But it does seem like he was sort of one of those anchors, or one of those rocks that people have in their lives that they can turn to in times of distress or when they're feeling unmoored. But whether or not he saw this coming, my sense from what he told Eric was that he was as surprised as anybody when the FBI came in there. Whether he thought that Mr. Fox was a little squirrely or not, I couldn't say, but he indicated that he didn't even conceive that this sort of thing might be possible, and that he was grateful that the FBI had an informant in this group so that what they were up to could be uncovered and stopped before it went too far.
Yeah. You alluded to the fact that there's still a lot more to be known about the conspirators and about what's outlined in the indictment. What questions are at the top of your mind about these guys?
I think the number one question for us is, how serious are they? How serious were they? We're 3 weeks out from the election. They had indicated that they planned to act before the election. It does seem like they did some sort of training. It does seem like they did some sort of reconnaissance. Again, we're relying on the federal government, and these are just accusations. So I don't think the government is in the business of making things up, but we're going to have a much better feel for this as the case unfolds. But the biggest question I have is, were they going to do this? How close were they to grabbing Governor Whitmer and making off with her and whisking her to Wisconsin for some sort of show trial? I'm concerned about that. And the other question that I have is, they've got 13 people so far. They're just starting to talk to them. How many more are we going to have by the time they're done? Because the way it works is, when you get grabbed, sometimes you can get a lighter sentence or better treatment if you offer up other people. So if these 13 people know other people who have not come to light yet, do we end up with 26? Do we end up with 39? Do we end up with more? I really want to know how deep this goes and how serious it was.
Yeah, we do know that one of the alleged conspirators named in the charging documents is a resident out of state. Do you think we're going to see that web expand further geographically?
That's a great question, because Michigan does have a history of disaffected people, sort of, and I call them self-styled militias. because nobody's asked them to do this. They've decided that they are the modern Minutemen who are going to rescue society, because I certainly don't remember mentioning to these guys that we're a little worried that things are going off the rails. But is the person they contacted in Delaware someone they connected with online, or did they link to somebody else? Why were they going to Wisconsin? Was there somebody in Wisconsin who had a facility they thought was safe? Why did they have a meeting in Ohio? Were there people in Ohio who were involved, or did they just want to somehow get outside the boundaries of Michigan? At this point, the Free Press has uncovered quite a bit, but I think by the time we're done, what we know is going to seem minuscule. And I do think that we're going to see more names and more people come into this, because this was a little more sophisticated than a bunch of geeks getting online and saying, hey, why don't we blow something up? Although they did indeed try and blow stuff up, they didn't do too well at it based on what the feds tell us. And I think we can be grateful for that.
M.L. Elric, longtime Michigan journalist. These days you can read his work in the Detroit Free Press. M.L., thank you so much.
Thanks.